Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter. At 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. We are at our reporters' roundtable, and we have a lot to talk about tonight. A racially tinged Senate runoff in Mississippi. Five high school football players in Montgomery County accused of raping other players with broomstick handles. A young black Army veteran shot to death by police in Alabama. Migrants from Mexico and Central America running for the U.S. border. And D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser and Mumbo Sauce. Yeah, we're going to talk about that, too. Those are our stories. Those are the ones that are on deck tonight. My guests are Dr. Clarence Hussein, chair of Harvard University's Political Science Department, the one who's making all that noise with those papers, Dr. Hussein. I'm not going to ask you anything that you don't know. You don't need any notes. Brenda Seiler is here, contributing writer at The Washington Informer, and James Wright, reporter with the Afro-American newspaper. Lines are open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Thanks for coming in, everybody.
Thank you.
All right. Now, before I get to you guys, we're going to begin with the Senate runoff in Mississippi. Troy Johnson, anchor and reporter for WAPT Channel 16 in Jackson, Mississippi, starts us off.
What we're kind of hearing is that voter turnout is trending at about 30 to 40% of registered voters for today's election. But the Secretary of State here in Mississippi says that could be a last push over the final hours. The polls close here 7 o'clock Central Time. There were 43,000 absentee ballots requested for this election. That's 23,000 fewer than 3 weeks ago. So there is a lot of interest because of the comments that Cindy Hyde Smith was, you know, reported saying and caught on tape saying. But will it be enough to shift votes for Mike Espy? That remains to be seen.
Well, let us see. We only have an hour left before the polls in Mississippi close. Doc, your thoughts about what's happening right there, right there in Mississippi. Does Mike Espy have a chance?
He does have a chance, but it's going to be tough. I know Mississippi a little bit. I actually did poll watching in the congressional district, district number two that Epsi won back in 1986. And it hasn't changed a lot since 1986 in terms of the attitudes. The problem that Mike is facing is that this is as Trumpian a state as you can get. It's majority white, conservative, Christian, rural. And you just kind of tick off the boxes. And it's also fights with Louisiana for being the less educated state in the country.
Yeah, so, fight to the bottom.
So
right,
this is a real real struggle. I would say on the positive side, though, just as in Florida and just as in Georgia, even though those two governor races were lost, the candidates pull people into the electoral process. And in a number of cases down the ballot, there were progressives and there were African Americans who won because of the energy brought by these really high profile races. So even if Mike Espy is not able to win, it's my sense that you have a much more engaged Democratic and particularly black Democratic base going on in Mississippi right now.
Your thoughts about what's happening there, Brenda? This is one of the things that is interesting about Mike Espy is that while he's trying to become the first black senator since Reconstruction, he was the first black congressman since Reconstruction. So he has history.
If he's able to engage voters now, even if he is not able to win, that's going to say something about the 2020 race and where that could possibly go. I know we're hoping for a miracle like there was with the Senate race in Alabama last year, that voters will come through. at the last minute and vote in a direction that would put SB in office. But again, it seems like the numbers are overwhelmingly not in his favor. But I like the idea and the concept that he's engaging a new voter constituency mm-hmm. that may be able to make a difference in the future.
Mm-hmm. What is this still the old South, James?
Let me just say this about your question about this is the old South. Mississippi is slowly, slowly changing. Mike Epsi has a chance if he can get people in the Jackson metropolitan area, not just Jackson, but the metropolitan area out, in the Biloxi metropolitan area, and particularly in the college kids in Oxford. He has a real shot, as well as the Delta, if the vote, all the votes are counted in the Delta. Mississippi is changing, but very, very slowly. And let me just say this. It would really be in the best interest of all Mississippians if they sent Mike Espy to the U.S. Senate. Because, frankly, Hyde Smith as a senator is very undistinguished. And there's really not very much she wants to do. So she's not going to do very much for the state. So it would really be in the best interest for them to send Mike Espy to the Hill as opposed to her.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are at the Reporters Roundtable talking about some of the top stories of the week. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call because we are going to be jumping ahead to some other issues. One of the things that happened overnight was at the State House in Mississippi, there were nooses discovered, seven nooses. And we go back to Troy Johnson because he had this to say about where those nooses came from.
Essentially, there were signs that it's kind of an interesting way to make a point. You know, when you see nooses, you're thinking that, you know, it's obviously racist symbolism, but it looks like those signs were put there to draw attention to the fact that, you know, other African Americans like Emmett Till, et cetera, were killed in an environment in this state and they were hung by nooses. So it was kind of, an interesting display, to say the least, and surprising to know that, you know, that's who posted those signs.
And to put a finer point on it, we've learned that those were mostly black activists who placed those nooses at the State House. Good idea, bad idea?
Difficult idea.
There you go.
I think, you know, the problem is that just like using the N-word, it emotes a very long, ugly history, regardless of whose mouth it's coming out of. And so while I get the point that they're trying to make, of course, the initial reaction was that this is the KKK, this is neo-Nazis, you know, it's coming from that. But I want to echo a point my colleague just made about who really is fit for this who should have this job. President Trump, in his remarks in Mississippi, said that Epsi represents the far left and questioned whether he's fit. When you actually look at the qualifications, Mike Espy is way more qualified than Hyde Smith. And when you look at issues of temperament and you look at who is actually doing outreach, Mike Espy does not represent the far left and, in fact, has been explicitly centrist.
Yeah.
On the other hand, Hyde Smith has simply ticked off everything that Donald Trump has said, has made zero effort to reach out. And what's really shameful is not just that she made those remarks, but she has no ability to understand the impact of those remarks.
Mm-hmm. But let us say, for the sake of argument, that Espy wins. The Republicans would still hold a majority in the Senate. So what does that mean going forward when we're talking about this new session?
Well, that would be fantastic because for the first time in the history of this country, you have four black U.S. senators. And that would, the symbolism itself, if not the power, the symbolism of itself would be very powerful, particularly in a clubby atmosphere such as the Senate.
Mm-hmm. And you're talking about an opportunity, again, to get to an electorate that hasn't been represented, feels they haven't been represented before. So now you're giving some people, some voters in Mississippi, a voice. I go back again. It's opening a door, I feel, to what we can look forward to and work towards for 2020.
But this is what Espy said today, because he is, in addition to being a Democratic centrist, he is also a realist.
But I am certainly going to roll up my sleeves and work with everyone, irrespective of race, irrespective of party, irrespective of religion, irrespective of sexual orientation. I work with everyone of goodwill who wants to pick Mississippi up.
Yeah. There's no other way, no other place to go but up.
Right.
So definitely something to think about. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are at the Reporters Roundtable talking about the top stories of the day. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call. We are going to move forward with our next topic. And this is a heartbreaker. The killing by police in Hoover, Alabama, which is immediately west of Birmingham. Mm-hmm. A 21-year-old Army veteran, Emanick Bradford Jr. He was killed on Thanksgiving Day by police. And to be quite honest, there have been so many explanations and retractions and statements released about what actually happened. And of course, be not surprised that Benjamin Crump has been hired by this young man's family.
Not only did they assassinate his person, but they truly assassinated his character. When you Google his name, his picture would come up and it would identify him as a killer.
Yeah. So we still don't know what happened.
And this is the way it always goes. There's always a lot of explanations. That means right there, and there's something funky going on. Then they disparage the name of the person that was killed. Then you know it's something funky has been going on. Mm-hmm. So every time, there's every other day, something different comes out. So the police are trying to make a case for why they messed up. Yeah. And it's just not going well. Nobody believes it. Nobody believes what the police are saying.
I think one of the things that's really interesting that has added to the confusion is that there was apparently some kind of fight or confrontation that did not involve this young man, and there have been questions about whether or not he had a pistol, whether or not he was running with a pistol, whether he was just running. His parents said he had a permit to carry, but that would suggest that he had a pistol. I somebody help me with this, because I'm still confused. Other than running while black in the midst of a disturbance, as to why he was targeted.
Well, see, I think there are a couple of things. One, and we should note the other case that happened recently outside of Chicago with Jameel Robertson, who's a security guard, who had actually stopped someone and the police roll up and kill him. Mm-hmm. And then we think about Tamir Rice, who was killed within seconds. So you've got an issue of an environment that permits immediate execution of African-American men who are thought of as dangerous. Mm-hmm. No one is reporting that they said, stop, identify yourself, are you a threat? They just kind of come down firing. And then I would also link this to the Justice Department under Jeff Sessions. And his last act going out of the door was to basically make it more difficult for the federal government to put limits on what these police departments do. So we really have a problem that starts in these local areas where police have acted with impunity all the way up to the Justice Department. Obama tried to deal with that with these consent decrees, mm-hmm. and now all of that's under attack.
James.
You know, the interesting thing about this particular case is that it just shows that Some police departments have not reformed themselves. Hoover, as you said, is west of Birmingham. It's a much smaller city, much more. It's more prosperous. I'll just put it like that.
I used to work in Alabama. Hoover's a nice place to live. Let's just be clear.
It is
not Birmingham.
Right.
Hoover is not. Right. If you have money, you live in Hoover.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. And so let us be clear. If you have money, you shop at that mall.
Yes.
Okay. Been there, done that. But go ahead. Yeah.
And my quick point to that is that perhaps there's an underlying reason in Hoover that perhaps there are just too many African Americans that are there. And maybe this may be a subtle sign to the African American population in Alabama, particularly in that part in the metropolitan area of Birmingham, that we really just don't want you here. Mm. So, yeah.
Something to think about. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Quickly, Walter, calling from Northeast D.C. Thanks for calling, Walter. What's on your mind?
Well, thank you, everybody. Thanks for letting me to talk. My concern is about what happened in Alabama where Doug Jones won because of Roy Moore.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with that is this lady who used to be a Democrat, now a Republican, people are just so immune to what she's saying. And with President 45 down there, it would be a shock. It would be a miracle. But I think the history of what Mississippi is always going to always be there. And that's the sad thing about it. But I wanted to also think President 45 might shut down the government if he doesn't get that border wall.
And that's, yeah.
The scary thing about that is, did he not say that Mexico was going to build the wall?
No, he said they were going to pay for it.
Pay for it.
Yeah. Walter, I need to stop you just for a minute. I'll let you pick up your point on the other side. I've got to take a quick break. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are at the Reporters Roundtable talking about the top stories of the week. So please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. This conversation continues in just a few seconds on Sirius XM Channel 141. We'll be back in just a moment.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are at the Reporters Roundtable talking about the top stories of the week. My guests are Dr. Clarence Lussain, Chair of Howard University's Political Science Department, Brenda Seiler, contributing writer at the Washington Informer, and James Wright, reporter with the Afro-American newspaper. Lines are open if you have a comment or question. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Walter, before I let you finish your point, one thing about Cindy Hyde-Smith and Alabama, even though she's in Mississippi, you said that she was a Democrat. Yes, she was. But also remember, and this is a little institutional here, Senator Richard Selby was a Democrat.
Yes,
he switched parties in 1994. Mm-hmm. So he started off as a what they would call a blue dog Democrat. But he has been a Republican since 1994. But please go ahead and finish your point.
Well, thank you for that information. I forgot about Richard Selby.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sad, but also you were talking about how these young black men are being killed, being shot. And the one that the security guard had, this guy was a security officer doing his job, and he still got shot.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is so much insensitive about, well, black people killing black, all these black people killing, but yet it's so racial that if you say, well, how about these people who are shooting up in these, it shouldn't be no color line, but it seems like everybody wants to make excuses. Well, black people do in violence, but what about whites too?
Yeah.
Share the load if you can. But guys, thank y'all very much. You have a good night and well, bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Walter. I appreciate anybody want to speak about what Walter was sharing with us.
Well, I would just mention that Trump was a Democrat at some point too. So It's really about, you know, Where you're at, you know, at the moment.
It made my head swim.
Right. It seems as though we've got a trend here. What's happening here?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely something to consider. So thank you for sharing that with us. Hopefully we will get the police body cam. Yeah. From the officers in Hoover, because I would imagine that until such time as that happens, until such time as more witnesses come forward to clear up this situation, we may never actually know what happened to this young man. It is just a really confusing and complex and certainly unfortunate situation. Let us move on to something that is also, I would argue, confusing, unfortunate, and just really a very difficult thing for us to even swallow. We have five teenagers at Damascus High School in Montgomery County. Four of them charged as adults with rape, first degree rape. They have been released on $20,000 bond. They are accused of raping their JV football teammates with a broom handle. And yesterday, this is what Montgomery County Executive John McCarthy had to say after they were released on bond.
These are crimes, and I would caution anyone to refer to this as hazing. Will we be looking at and examining the potential that this happened in prior years? The answer is absolutely yes.
That's heavy, because first of all, the Montgomery County School Superintendent said he called this hazing in a previous press conference. The Montgomery County State's Attorney just said this isn't hazing. He said that it is a crime. It is a crime of unspeakable violence. And he's also saying that he believes this isn't the first time that something like this has happened, which I don't know which is scarier.
We've heard about hazing incidences and colleges and universities for years that have been horrible. It's so difficult for me to understand how this is now happening at the high school level. I don't know, you know, you're getting ideas from media. Is that where you're getting it from? Is that where these young people are getting it from? You know, what is going on in our school systems that how are kids being raised? It's just what kind of values about other human beings are being taught in the home. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't make sense. And I'm not sure. I'm glad that the legal officials are dealing with it so that it is known that this is unacceptable. And this is not the way that you behave and treat others.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Well, you know, what really bothers me is the fact that where were the coaches? Where was the administration? And just like McCarthy just said, this isn't the first time this has taken place. This is only the time that it's really been reported. Where are the coaches? What are they doing? Are they keeping an eye on these young people? Are they keeping an eye on the locker room? Are they really doing what they're supposed to be doing? Are they just sort of just coaching just to be coaching in order to get a paycheck and another step up?
But let me say this. Did you play sports in high school?
I ran track.
You ran track.
Believe it or not.
Yeah. I'll let you have that. Damascus is a large high school. Mm-hmm. This is Maryland high schools are well populated. Yeah. And so teams are big. And Damascus is a newer high school. It's large. I will tell you that having, believe it or not, I played sports too. I wrestled in high school, although some would disagree with that. You can't keep an eye on everyone.
Right.
And as was said yesterday in the hearing, the coaches were there because that's when it stopped. Because according to court documents, one of the accused said, "Here comes the coach." Okay. But you can't, you know, and we're talking about a foot where you've got junior varsity, you've got varsity, you've got managers. I would argue that this is not something that happened in the middle of the basketball court where everybody could see it. I'm sure they were in a secluded place where they could not have been seen, which is not to excuse parental supervision, coaching supervision, teacher supervision, but I would argue you can't watch everybody all the time.
Yeah, so what partially disturbs me about this is this happens in the Me Too moment.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly the Me Too moment is not reaching everywhere it needs to reach. And you cannot, in these circumstances, govern every single space. What you can do is control the culture. And apparently it had happened before. So even though it hadn't made news and been reported, they had a name for it. They call it grooming or something like that. So you've got, when you have these young men in these situations, these are opportunities before something like this happens to talk about how you behave and what's unacceptable and what's intolerable. And that's where I would be struck that the coaches did not, they certainly didn't sanction this, but it also doesn't seem that they understood the need to have a counter understanding so that anybody will report this if somebody suggested doing this, because this was a collective effort. None of these accused five young men apparently said, "This is a bad idea, right? We should not do this." And they trapped these younger boys, and then, you know, they carried this out. So I think the lesson here is really, if you're a coach, and I have a son that's playing sports, and his coach talks about this, you've got to talk to young men about sexual assault and how they behave with women and obviously with anybody.
Now, here's the other question. To my earlier point, no, I don't believe that you can watch everyone every time. But as you're suggesting, if this assault has a name, okay, And if it has happened before, then the question becomes, what did the coaches know and when did they know it? Even if they weren't aware of this alleged incident, but had they heard about something like this happening before? Had they had discussions about it? And was this just a defiance on the part of these football players, or did the coaches know?
I think the coaches probably knew something was going on in terms of a orientation or hazing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, again, these young men were taken off somewhere at a time. Nobody knew what was going on. But I want to follow up on something that Dr. Lusain said about the culture, because it's not just happening in sports. You know, we've heard about hazings with bands,
mm-hmm.
probably other clubs and organizations. So the school system has to establish this is not acceptable for anything happening to any student for any activity.
Right.
And that's what I hope will come out of this.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Reggie. Reggie calling from Richmond, Virginia. Hey, Reggie, what's on your mind?
Peace and blessing. Great job to the panel. Unfortunately, let's not forget Bowie State Band. I had the pleasure of being set up at football championship game with Bowie beat Fairfield, and that band had a hazing incident, and they couldn't attend. So it's not just in high school, and also, I know I'm going to say something going to get people mad, but fraternities and sororities, I mean, you have different fraternities and sororities that are facing million-dollar losses because of the craziness going on. You can't even have a line in some colleges now where the grad chapter has to take over. So it's not just in this high school. It's kind of culture that's permeated over the last 10 years.
But I think Brenda made the point that we knew that this culture existed in college. Fraternities and sororities. There are banned fraternities and sororities. Obviously, the situation of Bowie State is the most recent. But as we know what happened at FAMU years ago, where the drum major was killed. And so we are familiar with this culture. And this isn't a black school thing. This happens at white schools. We saw what happened in Pennsylvania, where the fraternity pledge drank himself to death. But I think, as you're suggesting, Reggie, and as Brenda just said, this is about high school. How did this get to high school? And it's not just the guys. It's happening with the girls too.
Because I think, and this has been going on a long time, but in high school, you're projecting and getting out of high school and going to college, university. And I think the high school kids are trying to live out some sort of college, university idea before actually graduating from high school.
Or maybe just growing up too fast.
And I think also, I go back to what morals are in the home. You know, what's happening in the home.
Reggie, thank you so much. One other thing before we go to break that I think we should bring up. And we don't know an exact number, but one of the things that we saw when these teenagers were in court, we saw their relatives come up. The lion's share of these students are black.
Yeah.
If you can assume that these are the parents, because I saw a whole bunch of black folks walk up there. There was one white guy up there and you can't necessarily, suggest anything by the names, but the four that are charged as adults are Caleb Thorpe, shrugs, don't know. Will Smith, shrugs, don't know. Christian Lee, shrugs, don't know. JC Abedi, shrugs, don't know. But like I said, there are five of them. One of them charged as a juvenile, but of the four, at least half of them are black, and then there's a question about whether or not that plays a part in the charging them as an adult.
Well, part of it is that most of them are black, or all of them, I think, but some of the victims are actually white. So that's already emerging as well as a area of investigation.
We're going to talk a little bit more about this on the other side as we continue at the Reporters Roundtable. We'll be back in just... Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're at the Reporters Roundtable talking about some of the top stories of the week. Before the break, we were talking about race and the Damascus junior varsity football players accused of rape. If you have a question or a comment, you can give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So, Dr. Luzane, you were talking before the break about race and this particular case. Do you believe that these four young men are overcharged as adults, and what part race may play in that, in your opinion?
Well, it's hard to know they're overcharged. The allegations are as serious as you can get. Sodomy, sexual assault, rape. That apparently went on for a while. So this wasn't an accident. This wasn't spontaneous. And so that is really frightening. And again, I go back to, you've got to have and raise young men where someone will say, this is wrong. And I'm not participating. And in fact, I am, stopping this to the best I can. That's how we have to raise our children, not just to not do these kinds of acts, but to intervene where possible and take some responsibility, because this is it's just so horrible. These children who were attacked will be scarred for life.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the thing about it is that what really disturbs me, and maybe I'm a bit old-fashioned, but not I shouldn't be, but I'm a bit old-fashioned. Black people don't do that. We don't.
We keep hearing that.
Yeah, yeah, we don't do that kind of stuff. We don't do that kind of stuff. No, that's not us. So what in the world kind of influence are these young people getting into? Oh, what are they listening to? Who are they talking to? What kind of peer pressure is that?
Yeah. Interesting point. Let's hear what TJ has to say. TJ, calling from Ohio. Thanks for calling, TJ. What's on your mind?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Can you hear me okay?
Go right ahead.
Okay, great. You know, I'm just listening, riding home from work, and I was just thinking about my college days, and, you know, I heard someone say, well, you know, you think about what are they learning at home and what are they seeing on TV? They're seeing all of this. I think about my college days. And I didn't pledge as a fraternity or a sorority. I pledged as a little sister to a fraternity that I guess partnered with a sorority. And as a little sis, we were somewhat hazed, but not in a vicious kind of way. And I just thought, well, you know, if this is what it's going to be like taking that next step, I certainly don't want somebody in my face screaming at me or whatever, listening to some of the brothers talk about crossing the sands and having hot wax dripped on them and things like that. Those are things we have done. So when I hear we don't do these kinds of things, yes, we do. Now, the other part of it is, and let's be real, I mean, these are things that are happening, whether you choose as a fraternity member not to speak about them because it's sacred or whatever, doesn't matter. They do it in the on the football team, in the bands. They do all this crazy stuff. But then I think about the kids in the high school level. You know, and we're not talking about what will you do to fit in at what cost. And yeah. I mentor a girls group right now in lower grades, fourth, fifth, and sixth grade. And just listening to this on the way home, I thought, okay, this is a new subject for me to discuss the next time we meet because I'm trying to prepare my sixth graders as they move up to the high school level in seventh and eighth grade, which is where we've moved our 7th, 8th grade kids district-wide to the high school levels now. Well, and I'm thinking, yes, what will you do? Where's the line that you'll stop that you want to be on the soccer team or the football team or the band or whatever, that you want to be in a group so badly that you'll give up what to prove yourself or to show that you're not afraid or you're hard like that? You know?
Well, TJ, what part of, first of all, good for you for using this as a stepping stone to engage these young people in this conversation. What part of Ohio are you calling from?
Cincinnati.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you so much, TJ. I appreciate it, and thank you so much for your phone calls. I want to move to our next topic, because certainly this is something that we have seen a lot of in mainstream. The tear gas to disperse migrants that have rushed the border in San Diego. And this is what President Trump said about it yesterday.
The tear gas is a very minor form of the tear gas itself. It's very safe.
He was talking about safe tear gas. Of course, there were children in that group of Central American and Mexican migrants trying to seek asylum here in the U.S. There's so many moving parts here. We've got the caravan that wasn't spoken about after the midterms, and now that the caravan is here, now the president is talking about it again. We've got these immigration issues. I'll let you start, you know, Dr. Luzan. Let's straighten out this twisted ball of string here.
There is so much wrong with this whole situation, from the illegal posturing of troops to the illegal denial of people to have asylum to a president who many people thought caging children was his low when clearly it's not. And what strikes me again and again and again is there is very little effort to check this president by the institution that can do it, which is the U.S. Congress. Mm-hmm. And so, again, we're in another absolutely crazy moment, absolutely inhumane moment, where children in diapers are running from what actually is CS tear gas, which is dangerous. They do not use it in war. It is just reprehensible in any kind of way you can think about it.
Yeah. Brenda.
you're absolutely right. It's like all levels of wrong from the beginning. There's so much lying out of the White House, where at a rally last evening, the president indicated that the people that got through this small opening in the wall. There is no wall. Because Congress didn't appropriate the money, so there's no wall. And so it's like, that's not even true. And a lot of people, I think, that has been lost is that this Saturday, there's going to be a new president of Mexico,
yes,
Andres Obrador.
Right.
And so he's already making some statements, but it's like, what's going to happen then? What is he going to do? It's almost like his hands are tied before he's gotten into office in terms of a remedy, and what could possibly be the remedy. I'm also disappointed that I'm not hearing anything from the Democrats, even the Republicans that are leaving because they're repulsed by the current administration. Nobody is saying they've gone ghost.
Yeah.
So, like, say something. What have you got to lose, especially the Republicans that are leaving? Just say something.
Well, one of the things that we saw during the Obama administration, that this issue of immigration, particularly south of the border, is very difficult. It's very complex. I'm not even talking about the DACA situation. Mm-hmm. But we're just talking about coming to America.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants to come to America. And there was nothing that was done during the Bush administration that solved the problem. It got worse under the Obama administration, and now it is even worse. And no one seems to have an idea other than the president now saying, close the border.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not going to work.
Well, you know, what Trump is doing is that he's going outside the Beltway into these rural areas. He's going to these rural states such as Mississippi, and he's going to these western states and areas that are really homogeneous for the most part. When I say homogeneous, I mean white. And he's scaring up these poor folks who are on their way to the United States because they live in horrible conditions in El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras. And what he's doing is that he's portraying these poor people as the boogeyman. They're coming to get you. Mm-hmm. They're going to rape you. They're going to take your jobs. They're going to do that. And he doesn't say that, but he doesn't have to say that because that's what he's saying. And he's doing that for political points. But I also believe he's doing that just out of his pure bigotry.
They're coming with romaine lettuce. That's what they're coming with. I've got a few minutes left. Who likes mambo sauce? Let's be fully transparent. Mayor Muriel Bowser made a comment during the Thanksgiving holiday. It was a Facebook post about mambo sauce that started an explosive online debate. The post said that people should stop calling it quintessential D.C. She doesn't like it. I don't like mambo sauce either, but I believe that it is as D.C., and I said this last week, it is as D.C. as go-go, and right, leave mambo sauce mm-hmm. alone. Real quick, why did the mayor say this, and what is the bigger issue here, Brenda?
She didn't have anything else to say.
You think that's what it
is? In terms of going into the holiday, you know, let's just get some conversation going. That's all I felt it was. It was just a conversation starter. Get some buzz, some news, visibility around it, and move on to something else. It was not as controversial as maybe I thought it was, but it is.
Dr. Luzan?
Yeah, I'm not mad at it. I don't eat chicken wings. I'm pescatarian, so keep moving.
James?
The black population in D.C. is losing traction.
Mm-hmm.
That's what mumble sauce is really, really deep down inside is about.
Yeah. And some have argued that it is a gentrification statement, that because if you're not from here and if you are moving here from other places, you don't know what mambo sauce is. And certainly online, there were very few, if any, black folks who did not support mambo sauce. And the outsiders, a lot of them were saying, what?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there you go. I want to thank all of you for coming in and sharing the mics with me. I appreciate it. Looking forward to talking to you again. That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Tuesday, November 27th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.